Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in Central Iowa. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your reporter and host for today. Thank you for listening. The weather, in a word, is spring, and spring in Iowa brings change. I had to scrape crusty snow from the windshield this morning. Accompanied by a strong northwest wind, it feels like winter. However, the snow should melt, with a high of 34 today and upper 40s this weekend, then proceeding into the 50s and 60s next week, but maybe some rain on Tuesday. But spring, bring it on. And now let's hear a report from Dennis Hart on the Week in the News, gleaned from our Ames Tribune. Hello, Dennis. Please share with us your good words.
Thanks very much. Much of the past week's news on the pages of the Ames Tribune had to do, of course, with the coronavirus. I'll summarize what was reported in chronological order, starting with last Friday's paper, which reported that local health officials were continuing their ongoing preparations for a possible community spread of the virus in Ames and in Story County. Healthcare providers, including the McFarland Clinic, were planning to help those who had questions or concerns about the virus by setting up a triage line. It would be similar to calling a nurse care line, where a nurse would be helping callers and perhaps directing them where to go if needed. The Iowa Department of Public Safety had already set up such a helpline, and you can access it by dialing 211. By last Friday, Iowa State University already had announced that its classes would go online after spring break and that it had canceled numerous activities and events. There was also word last Friday that Story County residents were stocking up on certain items and that stores were struggling to keep some products on their shelves in the wake of concerns about the coronavirus. Customers walking through the Walmart on South Duff Avenue in Ames last week faced a number of empty shelves that used to house such things as hand sanitizers, hand soaps, and all-purpose cleaners. It was the same at the Walmart on North Grand Avenue and at Target, Sam's Club, Fairway, and Hy-Vee stores. Target was planning to limit the number of items that customers could buy last weekend to give more customers a chance to buy those items. Meanwhile, those same stores were working hard to ensure cleanliness in order to prevent any spread of the coronavirus. Saturday brought word that the City of Ames and the Ames Public Library had announced they would be discontinuing the use of meeting rooms at the library by outside groups starting this past Monday. In addition, the library was discontinuing programs that would have been held there. Last Saturday also brought some non-coronavirus news that a lawsuit filed against Iowa State University officials by a nationwide free speech advocacy group had been dismissed. This after the university had changed policies that had been at the center of the case. The lawsuit had alleged that several policies, including a ban on chalking and a ban on student emails related to campaigns and elections, violated students' constitutional rights. Sunday's Trib featured a major story summarizing what had happened the previous week on the coronavirus front. But it also had word that the Ames School Board had heard about plans to possibly create an off-site elementary therapeutic learning center that could house some Ames and Story County students. That plan has not been approved by the board. It's being discussed because there are a small number of students who need more intensive intervention than what the district can provide inside the school building. Superintendent Jenny Reisner said there have been complaints all year about disruptive students in classrooms, and there's little the district can do in terms of removing those students. And Sunday's paper also had several stories that you might say were on the lighter side of the news. One of them involved Boone native Hawk McIntyre, a 20-year-old musician who recently made his national debut on NBC-TV's The Voice. He said he's in the process of putting together an album. Then there was the story about the Nevada author who is helping aspiring writers achieve their dreams. Jackie Haley is guiding authors on the path from getting a concept for a book to getting it published. And there was a story about a new event coming to Maxwell in May. It's called Market in the Park, and it's designed to be a small-town farmer's market. If everything goes as planned, the first one would be held on Sunday, May 3rd. It's scheduled to take place every Sunday after that next to the Maxwell City Park. So far, about 20 vendors have confirmed they'll take part. Tuesday's paper was all about the coronavirus. For starters, the Trib reported that schools in the Ames, Nevada, Ballard, Colonesco, Roland Story, Gilbert, and Collins Maxwell school districts would close for 4 weeks. The schools were on spring break this week. At the same time, Governor Kim Reynolds announced a waiver that means schools would not have to make up for the instructional time lost to the coronavirus. The governor also said Iowa would receive a U.S. Department of Agriculture waiver where schools will be able to continue providing meals to students. Also Tuesday, it was reported that two of the three major gym facilities in Ames had already announced they were shutting their doors for the foreseeable future. They are the Ames Community Center and Iowa State University's State Gym. The Ames Fitness Center, which has several locations around Ames, said it would remain open for the time being, but owner Tom Durkin said cleaning crews had been increased, group fitness classes had been canceled, and saunas and steam rooms had been closed. There was more Tuesday, including a story about how restaurants had been affected by the coronavirus outbreak. Dublin Bay Irish Pub and Grill saw a dramatic decline in customers on Monday, the day before St. Patrick's Day. The general manager said he'd never seen anything make such an impact. Hickory Park on South Duff Avenue in Ames announced it would offer curbside pickup for food orders. And at the Mucky Duck, customers were being encouraged to use a hand sanitizer at the door. The restaurant was also cleaning seats after customers were leaving. As for the Ames Public Library, it had been closed, as had the city auditorium, the municipal pool, the dog park, the ice arena, and the community center. All have been shut down until May 15th. The Ames Animal Shelter has also been closed for tours and visits, but animals are still available for adoption, and they will be listed online. In addition, city-sponsored events such as Eco Chats and the Ames Film Festival had been canceled. And one more note from Tuesday, the McFarland Clinic had launched that Coronas triage line that I had talked about earlier that will help direct community members experiencing possible symptoms of the coronavirus to the proper location. Those who are coughing and experiencing shortness of breath and a fever and who have had recent contact with someone confirmed or thought to have had the coronavirus are encouraged to call the triage phone line at 515-500-6711. That number again, 515-500-6711. Wednesday's paper brought more stories about the coronavirus. For starters, Story County announced it would close its offices to the public starting on Wednesday. That applies to all county buildings and facilities except for the Justice Center in Nevada and the Human Service Center in Ames. There was more. The Ames History Museum announced it would be closed from March 17th through April 13th. Ryman Gardens announced it would be closed from this past Wednesday through at least April 5th. There was also word that churches across central Iowa were taking measures to try to decrease the spread of the coronavirus. St. Cecilia's Catholic Church has held its final Mass until at least April 13th. The Ames Jewish congregation had stopped all services last week, and other churches around the area have moved toward live streaming of services online. All this taking place before Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds declared a state of emergency on Tuesday. She ordered the closing of bars, restaurants, movie theaters, casinos, senior centers, and adult daycare centers, among other places. The executive director of Heartland Senior Services in Ames said all activities at the center would be canceled immediately. She also said the Meals on Wheels program would continue to deliver meals to people's homes. Speaking of food, grocery chains Hy-Vee and Fairway said they were cutting store hours to give employees more time to clean and restock shelves. Fairway said it would limit its hours from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and said the first hour each day from 8 to 9 a.m. would be reserved for customers 65 and over, for expectant mothers, and for people with serious medical conditions. Hy-Vee said its new store hours would be 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. 7 days a week. Meanwhile, the United Way of Story County announced it was launching an emergency community fund and online food drive to ensure local pantries have what they need to help people. The fund and food drive will replace the organization's annual Live United food drive, which had previously been planned to take place from April 27th to May 7th. And one more note from Wednesday in the Trib, a feature story about an Ames man, Bob Block, who has been self-isolating since he learned he had been exposed to someone with the coronavirus while he was on a business trip to Denver earlier this month. Thursday's paper, yesterday's, brought word that Iowa State University had canceled spring graduation ceremonies and announced that online classes would be extended through the remainder of the school year. The university also plans to close residence halls, but will let students who cannot return home request an extension to stay on campus. University apartments will stay open. Also yesterday, word that Ames and Nevada schools had announced plans on how to continue providing meals for students in upcoming days as they prepare for a month's hiatus from classrooms because of the spread of the coronavirus. Both districts said they would assemble grab-and-go meals free for students in their districts who are 18 years old and younger. In Ames, meals can be picked up outside at Meeker, Mitchell, and Sawyer elementary schools starting Monday. Meanwhile, there was word that SkyRide in Ames is limiting the number of passengers allowed on each bus. That decision came after Governor Reynolds, along with numerous health officials, said that gatherings should be restricted to no more than 10 people to try to slow the spread of the virus. And one more note from a week of fast-developing news about the coronavirus, word that the newspaper that has been bringing that news to Ames residents, the Tribune, had itself closed its offices to the public starting this past Wednesday. The newspaper will still be printed and can still be reached by telephone and email, but its building is now shut to the public until further notice. And that, my friends, is your summary of an amazingly consequential week on the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, reporting today from California after a cross-country trip on Wednesday that took us through airports that were mostly empty and on flights that were far from full. We're now doing the best we can to shelter in place out here, as our state and county officials are asking us to do, and we're trying our best to stay healthy, as we hope you are as well. But through the magic of electronics, I'm planning to be right back here with you on Monday as we all work to get through this together. Have a safe weekend, my friends.
Young teacher, the subject of schoolgirl fantasy. She wants him so badly, knows what she wants to be. Inside her, there's longing. This girl's an open page, bookmarking. She's so close now. This girl is half his age.
Dennis Hart, and a music interlude from Sting and the Police, Don't Stand So Close to Me. Thank you, Bob Enders, for making that suggestion. And the old standards become new again. So here at KHOI, we are continuing to operate using safety measures as recommended by the CDC. Please remember that the information live by phone is 211. The number to call if you think you may be sick, a number we will keep repeating, is 515-500-6711. Do not go to the emergency room. Call 515-500-6711. Story County, to date, has no tested positive reports of illness with COVID virus. There are seven counties in our listening area that includes Webster, Story, Boone, Marshall, Green, Hamilton, and Hardin, where no positives have been detected as of this date. If you're just joining us, this is KHOI, the heart of Iowa, 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum, your host for today, with Ursula Rudenberg at the controls. So through the world of changes triggered by the coronavirus, we will be learning from KHOI's good friend Carolyn Raffensperger, the director of the Science and Environmental Health Foundation, on her thoughts this week concerning the emergency status that was imposed by Governor Kim Reynolds due to the coronavirus. Here's Carolyn. How is this unfolding in your life?
It's actually following weeks of preparation. And the preparation is winding down, and the settling in has begun. So yesterday I did make another run to the grocery store, preparing for what feels like an extended time of quiet.
Now, why do you feel extended quiet, that this isn't just going to roll over us and be gone?
That's not the way of this microbe.
Okay.
It appears that it is really a sticky in some ways, that it's fairly long-lived outside of the body, and it can be carried by individuals without symptoms. So it has a certain set of characteristics that make for a longer period of time where it's infectious and where a lot of us are at risk, as well as it's covering such a vast territory.
So you went to the grocery store. Your weeks of preparation are kind of now engaging. How do you feel about everything this morning?
I woke up with some mild anxiety. Can we get all of our friends through this? Can we get our community through this? Mm-hmm. And the better that we do together, if we come through this together with everyone well-fed, with everyone able to have their earthly needs met, I think we can do this. If we don't, it will be a little bit tougher. You know, the United States is based on a philosophy of the rugged individual, you know, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps.
Okay.
And what we're finding is that we're all connected, that we are connected to everything else in the universe. And it's a lesson that we are apparently learning the hard way. Yeah. I think ecologists and biologists learned it the sweet way, by learning to love the other beings and seeing what happened if we took down swaths of the natural world. It came back to bite us. But here we are. We are in a common pickle.
Well, we certainly have our challenges. Did the emergency status of closing the bars and restaurants yesterday morning, how were you received with that news?
It closed the fitness center, and that was probably the biggest effect on my life, because I've tried to live locally. Going out to eat was a rare thing for us, but that's just idiosyncratic. You know, other people who had very busy lives depended on restaurants and other things for social life and to fill in for time that they did not have to cook and prepare food. So I expect that that affects other people. It does mean that this time is one of self-discipline and learning to keep a rhythm that maintains sanity and health without some of those outside supports that we've come to depend on. I've been taking piano lessons for a year, and this morning I sat down to play a piece that I had known as a child but had not revisited, and it brought such comfort. It was a piece of music that I probably heard since before I was born, and hearing that music just settled a lot of the cells in my body down. And one of the things that my Northern Plains tribe says is that the law is sung. And that means that the natural world, that each species, all of those beings, the community, has a song. And when they make law for the human community, they actually sing it into being, because song cannot lie. And as I've been thinking about the role of music, music is that language beyond words. Mm-hmm. And finding music that expresses the deep concerns, the fear, the joys, the bonding together, I think that music is one of those things that we can depend on. And so I've been listening for the music of the natural world as well, mm-hmm. that the birds in the spring bring that song back to life, that life is continuing, life is going on, and so can we. One of my dear friends named Eileen Evans, who runs an organization called Voices from the Earth, is an expert in music of the Civil War and the civil rights movement. And in a workshop that she did, she said that music has work to do. Mm-hmm. And that during, say, the Civil War or during slave times, that the music communicated what needed to be done and the truth of the moment. During the flood of 2010 here in Ames, I wondered what the lullabies needed to be during this hard time. In 2010, we lost all of our water. We had horrible thunder and lightning with, I think, 19 inches of rain in 3 days.
Yeah.
And the sound of the thunder was not of that joyous spring rain that's going to bring morels and going to bring the spring flowers and, you know, the ramps and asparagus in the ditches. It was an angry.
Oh, as I recall, sound. It was quite ominous.
It was. And so I wrote about my friend saying that during slave times, the lullabies told the truth. But the truth was in their mother's voice. And so even those difficult lullabies that says, Mammy's going to be sold down the river tomorrow morning, the baby knew that they had heard that truth in their own mother's voice. The music has work to do. So I've been thinking about what the lullabies are now. What do we need in terms of the music of this day? Music that comforts us and music that is, that tells a truth about our situation. And so I've been looking for that kind of music and trying to tune my own soul to those sounds and those chords and those voices that are singing that kind of or making that kind of music.
Oh, so I have been hoping to not interrupt, but you mentioned a listening pleasure of something that apparently was very dear to your family and your mother. What was it that you listened to the first thing this morning?
There were two things that I have been listening to, and I'm not a big classical music fan as I might be, but I listened to Albinoni's Adagio, and it's a piece of music that I think is probably a string quartet or larger plays, and it's very legato and rounded. And so I listened to that last night, but I listened to a version of the 23rd Psalm, which is about being out in the valley, that even though we walk in the valley of the shadow of death, we will fear no evil. And this particular piece is very old, and it also has a lilt to it that surprised me. So listening to that was just a remarkable, soothing piece to set my day on. That today we're okay. Today we're okay. And for someone who is not okay today, if I know of them in my circle, I would do whatever I could to convey and give whatever it took so that someone else could have that same sense that arose for me out of that piece of music, if that makes sense.
Oh, I think so. You're referencing to truth and our emotional links to our walk and how we approach this day. It sounds very positive and uplifting, and thank you so much for sharing.
Well, let me just add one other piece of music that has meant a lot, and it was Sting, who was singing, sitting on the dock of the bay and talking about that song.
Otis Redding.
Yeah, Otis Redding. And he said that it's in a major key, so major keys are the ones that sound cheerful, and that it is actually, it has a minor sound. So I wondered how you make a song that's like that, that's in a major key, that has a minor sound. And then I wondered how you make a song that is in a minor key sound cheerful. Mm-hmm. And you know, so that interplay of we are in hard times, you know, hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered at my cabin door. Hard times come again no more. That I'm so interested in how music takes the true heart of where we are and gives voice to that. And, you know, you're a great music aficionado. And have made music a community venture. And I wonder why you did that. What brought you to convening the community around music?
Quite frankly, I think when we listen with our heart, there are certain knowings. And when you're in that sphere of vibration and positivity, that you just want to feed that, you know, we want more of this. And I think musicians, not being a musician actively, but certainly one that appreciates other people's talents, creates the format, if you will, for good things to happen. And musicians want to be appreciated. And when they see their music manifested in a smile or in somebody's glow, I think we're on something of real value.
Yes, and that's a pivot point for something else that I wanted to say. I think that music, whether it's the bird song or frogs calling in the spring, that it brings the reverence that I think is essential for living in the world in any way of integrity. And this idea that I've been working on for, you know, a gazillion years, called the precautionary principle, which is certainly needed now. And the idea of the precautionary principle is that you take action to prevent harm in the face of uncertainty. But we worked out all the ways of carrying out the precautionary principle over all these years, that you heed early warnings, something that we missed with the coronavirus. We did not pay attention to the signals that this virus was sending, which was virulence. You needed to take action to prevent widespread harm, and it's essentially stopped the world. And the world is still turning, but the world of humans has slowed down considerably. And then you need to set your goals. What do you want to do? What do you want to accomplish? And in terms of the coronavirus, you know, we want to protect the most vulnerable. We want to slow this down so that the hospitals are not overwhelmed. Exactly. And so the precautionary principle goes on. There's many other steps for implementing the precautionary principle. But upon first hearing about this principle, how do we use science in policy decisions with an ethic that if we can prevent suffering, we're obligated to do that? And Terry Tempest Williams, the wonderful writer from Utah, who's written fabulous books about the national parks and about wild places, and she wrote a book called Refuge in Unnatural History of Time and Place about the contamination of the Great Salt Lake. And she heard about the precautionary principle, and she said, it is restraint in the name of reverence. And as I played that beautiful 23rd Psalm piece, I thought, that is what we are called to do now. We are called to act with restraint in the name of reverence. Reverence for our community, reverence for the natural world, reverence for the community in which we find ourselves bound. It's become my watchword.
Yes,
restraint in the name of reverence.
It makes me appreciate and how grateful I am to have your telephone number to give you a call on a day such as this and learn and be inspired by someone with such a reverence for restraint and yet going about our lives and trying to look for the things that are still very important and very relevant and avoiding the aspects of fear that are kind of rife running through our communities.
That brings up another piece of music.
Okay.
And that is Amazing Grace. It was grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. When people ask me, because I'm an environmentalist, if I have hope, I say, well, not hope in the sense of optimism, but I do have hope in a sense of that orientation of the soul. Vaclav Havel said hope is not, you know, that cheerful, you know, everything's going to turn out all right. It is doing the orientation of the soul towards what is right. And I think that is not as satisfying as the concept of grace, which is there will be surprising things that emerge out of this, and the more that we can nudge them in the way of grace, that we can take care of our neighbor, that our neighbor is not hungry, that our neighbor's child is not afraid, that their sibling has enough to entertain them and learn, that they can learn interesting things, that sense of grace, that we're in this together, that we have each other's back, is the kind of grace that will our fears relieve.
Those are very powerful words and sentiments and emotions to carry us through this day. And I hope we get an opportunity to check in with you again.
Thank you, Pat.
You have been listening to Carolyn Raffensperger, the Director of the Science and Environmental Health Foundation, with her timely updates concerning the coronavirus impacts and the influences of music on our lives during these times of transition. And again, to date, Story County has no tested reports of positive illness with the virus 19. And also that extends through quite a few of the counties surrounding Ames. So I guess for March 20th, Webster, Marshall, Greene, Hamilton, Hardin, and Story and Boone counties have not shown that anyone has tested positive to date. And the criterion for being tested, I think, is worthy of these moments, of which there are two. If you've been in contact with someone known with the virus, that's a good chance to, a good opportunity to be tested. And the second criteria would be if you have the symptoms, which are fever, dry cough, you have to have both before they will proceed with the test. And information is coming out that the virus is spreading through the air, so that distance on the social distancing is very important. So we are in an era of transition. And speaking of transitions, now from the Ames History Museum, let's welcome Alex Pfeiffer on the line. Hey, Alex, I miss having you in the studio this morning.
Hi, Pat.
Yeah.
Good to talk to you, at least.
Yeah, the phone will suffice. So how are things at the Ames History Museum?
We're in the same boat. We've decided to shut down to help cut down on the spread of the virus. And, you know, we have volunteers and our staff that we want to make sure are kept safe. So we've decided, like the public library and a few other of our cultural institutions in Ames, that it's just wise right now to close up. And
yeah. I'm not surprised. Did you see the immediacy of that on Monday?
Monday is obviously a closed day for us, so we were behind the scenes kind of trying to plan and pivot. And between our directors and our lovely board, we decided it was best probably to end up closing. So I've been working at home since Tuesday now.
Yeah. I guess a timely topic. I'm sure curious, have the opportunity to talk to a historian. What are the comparisons between what you're witnessing now and what you've read about with the pandemic of the 1918 influenza?
Yeah, so when, you know, this whole current pandemic started playing out a little bit, of course, my mind always goes to, you know, we're talking about quarantining and things like that, and, you know, has this ever happened in the Ames community before? And it actually has. We're not the first generation to deal with this, but it's been long enough now, like you said, in 1918, the flu epidemic that happened just after the end of World War One, that there are no current Ames residents that have a solid memory of that happening. There's not many people that lived through, and I don't know if we have any 102-year-old people in Ames that were still living here, but they wouldn't have quite the memory of being a 1-year-old. So it's kind of seeing a lot of comparisons that are very similar to the situation we're dealing with now that they were dealing with just about 100 years ago.
Yeah.
So at the end of World War One, all of the soldiers were obviously returning home. And on Iowa State campus, we had this Student Army Training Corps, which made up a good population of the Iowa State students there. And so as they were coming back, obviously this infection, this virus was getting passed along from people, you know, traveling back then. This is before air travel, of course. Everyone was coming by boat back. So spending lots of quality time very close together in boats and then kind of dispersing themselves all over the country. So it was very easy to see how that could spread and follow it back then, a little bit easier than today, where we have so much jet travel and things like that, that it's really hard to pin where people have been exactly.
Yeah.
So having them on campus, that really kind of started to get things going on there. So a lot of Iowa State students started to become ill, and they, in fact, on October 9th, 1918, Mayor Graves, Ames City Council, and Dr. Earl Rice, the Ames health officer, issued a closing of the public schools, theaters, churches, and places of amusement.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of similar to what we were dealing with just a few days ago.
Exactly.
With Reynolds closing down the public schools, or recommending that the public schools close, but just seeing a total shutdown of the youth there. And of course, some of the business owners were also a little bit upset about that, because they saw their business going down.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually had to make a special proclamation saying that the student army training corps students were, it was off limits for them to actually go to any of the Ames businesses. They were not allowed to go there to cut down on the spread in town. And of course, back then they had very little information about how it was transmitted, transferred, anything like that. It was all very kind of unknown to everyone in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they actually decided to put Iowa State campus on lockdown. They quarantined the whole campus, and you actually needed a special pass to get off of campus,
mm-hmm.
either signed by the president or by General James Rush Lincoln, the ISU professor of military tactics. So
mm-hmm.
kind of a, you know, I kind of put myself in mind, you know, we're all living in Ames. We can kind of imagine Ames 100 years ago. Just imagine, you know, we're kind of dealing with a little bit of an opposite situation. The school is closed down, but they've sent everybody away basically besides some workers. But in this case, they actually had to keep students on campus to further limit the spread from going back to their hometowns and things like that. So maybe.
Yeah.
Kind of going in that direction, a little bit unusual. But
well, and the country had just been absorbed with the war to end all wars. So
oh, definitely.
There would seem to be a parliamentary sort of rule. And that interesting, very interesting. Were you able to glean any deaths that occurred connected to that influenza here in Ames?
So, yeah. Well, let's just start with the three. There's about 3,000 Iowa State students at that time, and it was reported that nearly half, 1,250, were reported hospitalized at a given time during this epidemic. So much, in fact, that State Gym on campus was converted into a makeshift hospital when the actually brand new college hospital could not take that amount of students. They were so overwhelmed that even the nearby Collegiate Presbyterian Church basement was also used for patients, including dormitories and some other houses around the area. But we did end up having, there were around 51 deaths on Iowa State campus during a 7-week period. And then in Ames proper, there were about 18 deaths. And we saw over the course of months of this going on, about 90 deaths in the community. So, you know, doesn't seem like a lot today. I mean, in our town, but Ames was a lot smaller back then too. So we got to imagine that there were, you know, 3,000 students and I think about 4,000 or 5,000, Ames residents. So we're looking at less than 10,000 people in Ames. So that's a significant number compared with that.
So everyone either knew someone or a family member that was directly affected, it sounds like.
That's for sure.
Numbers.
I mean, there were millions of deaths across the U.S. I was reading, before we even talked about doing this for the subject, I was reading a couple days ago about a parade that they had in Philadelphia in September of 1918. So that'd be about a month before the things started happening in Ames. And it's kind of reminded me a little bit of the St. Patrick's Day parades that were going on recently that they canceled. But in Philadelphia, they decided to go ahead with this parade, and it was pretty catastrophic. I think that they had around 200,000 Philadelphians that came to the parade. And there were hundreds of cases that came from that. And it was one of the hardest hit cities. Like, I think 12,000 people died in 6 weeks. And so because a lot of that, you know, because of that parade and not canceling that World War II victory parade that they were having.
Yeah, and there was a learning curve of how many people attracted the virus within hours. And and then states to the west, I think St. Louis mentioned, they essentially implemented the type of strategies that we're currently under. They got the message loud and clear. But I think there's a historical significance that you bring to this discussion that is very important. In, are there other pieces to this topic? I've kind of interrupted you here.
No, you're fine. It's great. You know, I think there's so many unknowns that were happening back in 1918 and even today. During this event on campus 100 years ago, their college hearse broke down at one point, and so they actually had to use like the mail truck to bring some of the bodies to the depot. And that, of course, caused some rumors about, was the mail going to be infected? And I think, you know, if you've been watching the news lately or anything like that, that seems to be a, with people not leaving their houses and ordering a lot of things on Amazon and other places, people are worried about, can their mail get infected? Can they get something from it being passed through people
that?
So I think there's some of these just little similarities that are interesting to note. And, you know, obviously they're not the same thing happening, but I think the parallels are interesting. And I think other thing, just kind of put yourself in the mind of someone back in 1918 in Ames, Iowa. Maybe you're an Iowa State student.
Right.
You're stuck in the dorm. You can't leave campus or anything like that. So maybe you can see some of your friends, but, you know, you're pretty still isolated. And there's obviously no TV to keep you entertained. There isn't even radio to get information out at that point either. Everyone's getting, you know, information by word of mouth, by the newspaper. So information's moving really slow. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, today, just think about that as we're all, maybe sitting at home watching Netflix while surfing the internet on our computer and also looking up other things on our phone about how lucky we are right now, I think, to be so able to be digitally connected to people. Like right now, I'm on the phone with you and we're talking, doing our regularly scheduled interview without interruption.
There are adaptations, and the fear of the unknown in the 1918 situation would certainly be similar to what people are experiencing now. I wonder if they, were there grocery stores? I wonder if how the public reacted in their yards, you know, with the news that this was coming. I kind of get the impression that they just didn't understand what was vectoring it. And some things have changed, but some things have remained the same.
Definitely. Yeah, I don't have any words of any mass hysteria or, any toilet paper runs back in 1918, anything like that. The actual town of Ames was not necessarily quarantined unless you had someone in your family that was sick. So everyone else was still kind of like right now. You're still kind of able to get out and go get the few things you need, and hopefully it's able to stay that way for us here.
Well, it certainly has a quality of containment. How do you feel as a necessarily a business, but someone who serves the public in this 2 weeks? Any projections on how you feel like this might proceed?
This is kind of getting into, we're just kind of getting out of our slower time of the year. Obviously during the winter, we get less foot traffic and things like that. But our, this month we were just scheduled to kick off our lecture series, which we've had for, I think, 12 or 13 years now. It's been going on. And I'm trying to think if we've ever actually canceled two of them so far, this one and the next one for April. So it's kind of a little bit unprecedented. We're kind of, hoping we'll be able to do our ones that are later in the schedule come early summer, and hope maybe if we're lucky, be able to reschedule some of those.
Alex, this is Ursula. As a historian, I'm curious how you are looking at what's happening right now, because we obviously are living a significant piece of history now in real time. Do you and your colleagues at the Ames History Center, at a moment like this, do you formulate plans about how to gather information about what's happening in real time to preserve it for posterity?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, the newspaper has always been one of our big key staples of the pulse on the community is definitely the newspaper. So seeing kind of the daily changes in the tones and things like that on how they're reporting, you know, I think it's been on the front page for the last couple days, I think, some of the coronavirus stuff.
So you save all those as a record?
Oh, yeah. The newspaper is definitely being saved in about three different ways. So there's the microfilm that gets put on, like, at the library, and then they eventually load that to the digital format after a little while. And then, of course, the traditional bound volumes where they'll put a whole month's worth of a newspaper in a very large book. So those are all getting saved for posterity, and we're able to go back and look on those. Well, you know, it's interesting with someone, though, I think things are changing so fast on a daily basis that the news can't keep up. It's definitely places like social media and stuff like that where you're seeing the most rapid changes. through people. Back then in Ames, they had a morning and an evening paper. So you could get informed twice a day about what was happening. Right now, we're getting informed by the minute, you know, we're getting announcements that the governor or the president is going to go on and speak.
So I have found
a lot to keep up with.
And I have found myself purchasing the Ames Tribune more so than any other time. So maybe it's worth pointing out the relevance and the necessity of a strong printed press is being appreciated at this time. And maybe a lot of the businesses that are closed down, you know, maybe gift cards and things to realize that that we can do. And maybe as Carolyn Raffensperger was encouraging us to look at how we can all get through this together. But supporting these local businesses, supporting the Ames Tribune, supporting this radio station, quite frankly.
Exactly.
We're trying to be the outlet to bolster people's spirits through this, through these troubling times. I'm glad that you're at the helm, if you will, chronicling this and kind of learning by the moment.
Oh yeah, this is going to be one of those events that anyone that lived through it, it's going to be a landmark kind of a thing. We're going to all remember this and talk about it, and it's going to be something that we're going to, you know, compare all things to in the future, I believe. It's going to be one of those kind of 9/11 Pearl Harbor kind of moments where, you know, the country is really coming together and trying to help each other, and hopefully we can all do it together.
Yeah, we've got definitely a time frame that it's going to be extended. Pretty sure that's kind of where I was going with that when we discuss how things are from 2 weeks from now. But this is going to be a long, steady pull to keep us all together.
Definitely.
Well, Alex, thank you so much. We're going to break away now with, let's get back into our spring mode. The snow will pass, the weather's going to change, and hopefully people will continue pulling together. So thank you so much, Alex.
Yep, thank you, no problem. And if you want more information about what events are going on, things like that, check out our Facebook or our website, ameshistory.org, to keep informed about what's actually going on.
And yes,
we'll get more info, we'll put it out there.
Okay, always. Thank you so much, Alex.
Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Ursula.
Okay. Psst.
Today's focus on phenology is the American woodcock, or timber noodles. It is a secretive and migratory bird found throughout Iowa each spring, summer, and autumn. Iowa is on the western edge of its breeding range in the eastern U.S. Woodcocks return each spring in mid to late March. It has a plump body, short legs, and a large rounded head, and a long, straight, prehensile bill. Adults are 10 to 12 inches long and weigh 5 ounces. Females are considerably larger than males. The bill is nearly 3 inches long. The woodcock uses its long prehensile bill to probe in the soil for food, mainly invertebrates, and especially earthworms. A unique bone and muscle arrangement lets the bird open and close the tip of its upper bill while it is sunk in the ground. Both the underside of the upper bill and the long tongue are rough surfaced for grasping slippery prey, earthworms. Woodcocks have large eyes located high in the head, and their visual field is probably the largest of any bird, 360 degrees in the horizontal plane and 180 degrees in the vertical plane. The plumage is a cryptic mix of browns, grays, and blacks, superbly camouflaged against the leaf litter. The brown-mottled American woodcock walks slowly along the forest floor, probing the soil with its long bill in search of earthworms. Unlike its coastal shorebird relatives, this plump little shorebird lives in young forests and shrubby old fields across Iowa. Its cryptic plumage and low-profile behavior make it hard to find, except in the springtime at dawn and dusk, when the males show off for females by giving loud nasal pee calls and performing dazzling aerial displays. The male gives a series of peeps on the ground and then circles to a height of about 300 feet, producing twittering sounds with his wings as he ascends. He then drops in a zigzag pattern to the ground where he walks stiff-legged around the female,
This dance is repeated over and over again, and it is a delightful rite of passage each spring. According to noted ecologist and author Jim Dinsmore, they place their nest on the ground in wooded areas along habitat edges or in the thickets along streams. The nest is a simple cup lined with dead leaves, pine needles, or twigs. They normally lay 4 eggs. Most nests are started in mid-April to early May. The female incubates 20 to 21 days. The young are covered with down and leave the nest soon after hatching. They are really cute little boogers and are cared for by the female for about 2 weeks, and the young fly at 4 weeks of age. As an aside, there is a pair of peregrine falcons nesting at the Iowa State Capitol building. One of the falcon's courtship strategies is for the male to food stash or create a cache of food for its mate. Prey items are gathered as ornamental courtship food items. Recently, a food cache was discovered that contained 14 food items, with 11 being woodcock. Clearly, the male falcon was selecting for woodcock. Taking into account the woodcock's sky dance performance each spring, it is easy to imagine the falcon utilizing the woodcock's vulnerability when they are fluttering back to earth. There would be a clear advantage for the male falcon in securing a few woodcock for their mate. However, the food cache was discovered with fresh woodcock in October, during the autumn season, when the sky dance is not performed. The male falcon was clearly selecting for the famous timberdoodles, even when they were not performing their courtship sky dance. It really shows how important the woodcock is for the falcon's courtship in spring, when the woodcock are vulnerable, and in autumn, when woodcock are migrating through Iowa. And that's our Focus on Phenology for March, when springtime's beginning to burst out all over.
This environmental update is sponsored by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Story County's Conservation Friends Group, working to enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation. Information can be found at oasco.org. And one more timely announcement, the Story County Emergency Management is working with the Iowa Homeland Security to help nonprofit organizations manage the financial burden of COVID-19 operations through a federal emergency management agency's public assistance grant. Melissa Spencer, deputy coordinator for the Story County, said, "This grant is designed to reimburse costs associated with emergency operations for jurisdictions and specified private nonprofit organizations that are on the front lines of the COVID-19 response," unquote. This grant program was activated by the president's signature of the Emergency Declaration for Federal Financial Assistance for Public and Private Nonprofit Agencies. Spencer said, quote, "We also want small businesses and private nonprofits to know that low-cost loans are available through the Small Business Administrations to help them weather this event. More information on who is eligible is available on the Story County Emergency Management webpage under the COVID-19 link." And that's www.storycountyiowa.gov/EMA. If your organization qualifies for either public assistance or small business loans, you will want to participate in the March 23rd FEMA and the SBA, that was the Small Business Association briefing, to participate in the briefing on March 23rd with FEMA and the Small Business Association's briefing, and to find out if you qualify for either public assistance or small business loans, please provide contact information via email at esf14@storycountyiowa.gov to Story County Emergency Management.
That email again is esf14@storycountyiowa.gov. And that's to Story County Emergency Management.
Yeah.
And it's good to hear that assistance is coming, much needed assistance is coming to nonprofit world and the small business world.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Fridays here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. And remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. This program is engineered by Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you, Ursula. And I have been your host, Pat Schlarbaum.